Thanks for tuning into Journey. Everyone is welcome at the table. We are a community being shaped by Jesus, experiencing and practicing humility, curiosity, belonging, and generosity. We hope to be a people who embrace the way of Jesus by listening first, speaking second, loving freely, and giving generously.
Okay, back to Advent, my favorite time of year. How many of you guys grew up observing Advent? Okay, so like a good amount. Okay, so for those of you who haven't and are wondering why on earth is this like non-denominational church where they're super casual and quite a mess, why are they celebrating something so liturgical? Well, it's not just about the liturgy, although the liturgy is beautiful. The word Advent in and of itself means coming or arrival. So I used to think that Advent was just this really fun way to count down the days until Christmas, and I got this cool calendar with all these chocolates in it, which I still 100% affirm the use of these calendars. But the chocolates each day kind of lead us to the day of Christmas when we get the presents and all of the celebration. And then as I've grown in my faith, I've realized that, oh, it's so much more than that. It's like actually preparing your heart to receive all the goodness that comes with Jesus coming to the earth. And even more so, my understanding has grown now that Advent is more than just this historical event that happened that is so true. It's actually a historical event that helps us look to a future event. So it's the first coming of Christ that we celebrate, and we look forward to the second coming of Christ. And then this third coming, which is this space that we're in right now, this liminal space between the already and the not yet, where Advent teaches us how to wait with hopeful anticipation. So in this space, we look back at history, we look forward at the hope that is to come, and we learn from these two things. So we don't come to church during Advent just to hear all the baby Jesus stories that we all know with the shepherds and the angels and Mary and the manger and all the things and the magi and all the arguments over what happened when and where. Okay? It's more than just that. We sit in this space in Advent time. We look back and we look forward because we learn. We get to study and learn and notice how God shows up in the world. It helps us face what is true about the world because Advent is typically a dark time that's leading up to this glorious time where we celebrate the birth of Christ. And it also teaches us to wait with hopeful anticipation. There is this amazing woman named Fleming Rutledge. If you don't know who she is, read everything she writes. She's awesome. She's a scholar. She's an Episcopalian priest. She's a reverend. And she's also a Tolkien scholar. So she takes all the Tolkien stuff and tells you all about how, I mean, she teaches how Jesus-y it is. And it's pretty cool. So anyway, what she says about Advent, about these three comings of Christ, is that Advent celebrates and holds together all three comings of Christ in one time. And Advent begins in the dark. And so today, I want us to go into the darkness of Advent and not just listen and hear these stories, but to actually learn what it means to practice Advent, to embody Advent, because that's what it is actually inviting us into. The Bible uses these images of light and darkness, these metaphors of light and darkness, from the beginning of it in Genesis all the way to Revelation. The writers of Scripture use light and darkness to tell the Christmas story. And so the next 3 weeks, as we enter into Advent and learn to practice Advent, we are going to look back, which is what we're doing today, at history, and we're going to look forward at what is to come, and then we're also going to look and sit in the here and now and what it means that Christ still comes in 100 different ways to us, hundreds and hundreds of different ways to us now. So, darkness. The Bible talks about light and darkness all the time, but first, the physicality of darkness is a real thing, right? And okay, if you're new to this, to Journey, we are a very, we're a weird community. We really like to talk with each other. We have a time where we ask questions. Questions are always welcome. And we really like to engage with each other because we think that, first of all, the people who are standing up here, we don't know everything. And also, it's good that it's okay for you to question the things that we say. And also, you have so much to offer this as well. It's not just the person standing up here or the people singing. We all have something to give in this time together. So I'm going to actually ask you to participate in this with me, like with your body and your mind and your words. And just be aware of that and listen for it that way. But the first thing I want to do is I want to actually talk about the physicality of darkness. And in order to do that, I would actually like the lights to be turned off in the room. And if you're watching online, I'm really sorry. This is probably really awkward for you. So just close your eyes and pretend that you are here with us now in the dark. Notice how you feel. Darkness quiets us. It can allow us to hide. It can cover us in good ways. And it can be frightening. I mean, some of us are remembering what it was like to be afraid of the dark. And the thing about darkness, too, is that after a few moments, your eyes adjust to the darkness. And sometimes you can even see in the darkness. Sitting in the darkness can be hard and uncomfortable, especially when we have, you know, a room full of people around us that we can't see. Darkness also exposes things. It reveals things. It exposes our vulnerability and our fragility. Sometimes when we're in the dark, thoughts come to the surface that we would never say out loud. Questions come to the surface that we're often afraid to ask. You can turn the lights back up gently. And what light does is it draws us towards itself. It can be warming, it can be comforting, it's illuminating, it's revealing, and it can even consume us in some ways. So when we go back in history and we look at the time when Jesus was born, the incarnation, the first coming of Christ, we enter into a very dark time in history for the Israelites, for the Jewish people. That time in history, they were being occupied. Their land was occupied by the Roman Empire. The people who were practicing Judaism in the temple, they were holding on to a faith that was generations old, a faith that was waiting and hoping for a deliverer for the people, an actual deliverer from the occupation and colonization that they had experienced, and an actual deliverer of their souls, but they didn't know what to expect. And then we have, involved in the story, we have this young woman who is engaged to be married. And she comes from the outskirts of Galilee. She's not anybody that anyone would even know or suspect as having any kind of divine interaction or association. The people in Israel at the time were facing all kinds of oppression. Rome was taking their money. They were taxing them so much that it was to the point of poverty for most people. Money was tight. Food was scarce. And fear was a prevailing feeling across the land. But then there are glimmers of light. Mary engaged to a man that could have definitely separated from her, much less had her killed, decides to stay with her after a dream where he hears from God. And then her cousin, Elizabeth, an older woman who was barren for years, becomes pregnant. And so we see these glimmers of light, visits from angels, words and prophecies. And then Elizabeth's husband, Zechariah, who is John the Baptist's father, when John the Baptist is born, he sings this song in Luke 1. And some of the lyrics go like this. And you, my child, John, you will be called a prophet of the Most High, for you will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of sin because of the tender mercy of God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace. The song Zechariah sings reaches back into the history of his people to the prophet Isaiah, who also spoke of a light coming into darkness. It's words that we're very familiar with this time of year. The light coming into darkness that he was talking about was about a soon coming king at an actual time and an actual place for his people, and also of a soon coming king whose kingdom would never end. Isaiah says, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. For unto us a child is born, a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness, and from that time on and forever." So, glimmers of light, and Jesus is born, and later on, one of his followers, John, writes this in the very beginning of his letter. It says, in the beginning, John 1, in the beginning was the Word. We're going to spend the next 4 weeks talking about these three words, in the beginning. I'm just kidding, that was a joke. Because we did that in Genesis. Spent like a month on three words. And you guys already forgot. Great, it's fine. Hopefully Mike's listening. Okay, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And later on, John even says that God is light, and in him there's no darkness at all. So light in Scripture, in the Bible, it's used all over the place in the Bible to describe the presence of God, the being of God, the Word and the work of God. It also describes the people of God made in God's image, right? So physically, light shines, and metaphorically, light shines. And both physically and metaphorically, the light uses the darkness to make itself seen. Darkness in Scripture is often, when it talks about darkness, is talking about the realm of sin and death, and also disordered desire and deception. Darkness is what forms things like depression, anxiety, fear, brokenness between people, brokenness between nations, brokenness with ourselves, brokenness with God. This is what darkness is, often metaphorically in Scripture. But when light comes into darkness, the light reveals all that is hidden and unseen. It reveals what's true. And it can be both comforting and terrifying, right? Because when something's in the dark and it's brought into the light, we then have to deal with it, right? I mean, we have to look at it. And we can choose to retreat from it and go back in the dark, or we can choose to look at it. We have decisions to make about it often. There's an invitation to do something that the light and the darkness has revealed. This is why it also says in John that the light has come into the world and people loved darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. And anyone who does wicked things hates the light and doesn't come into the light unless lest his works be exposed. But whoever does what is true comes to the light so that it may be clearly seen that his works have been carried out in God. Oftentimes, when things come out from the dark and into the light, they're horrifying. But when we let them be in the light, God will have its way with these things, and his work with these things that were once hidden, that are now redeemed, speak of his glory into the world. The world right now feels really dark, right? A weary world rejoices. Then, maybe now, for sure in the future, but it feels weary and dark. The song that we sang, the lyrics go, "Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till he appeared, and the soul, the collective soul of the earth, felt its worth." So as we sit and we think about a weary world, all kinds of things come to mind, right? Like there's wars, there's anger, there's hatred, there's all kinds of things, right? But Advent invites us into the darkness so that we can sit in the darkness, face what's true about the world by naming the darkness. Because when we name things, when we speak them out, they sort of lose their power, don't they? Typically in the church, we rush through the darkness because we just want to get to the light. And we come here and we put our smiles on and our joy and our happy and our Merry Christmas, and we just try to shove all the bad stuff aside because we're supposed to be happy, right? So I want to turn down the lights for a moment again, and I want to sit in the dark together, and I want us to think about what's dark. And I'd love for us to name the darkness together as though we are praying and giving it to the light, giving it over to the light. So if you would, just say out loud, name the darkness. Things like, things I've already said, like war and famine, depression, anxiety, infertility, the things that draw us to the darkness. Use your voices and name them. Revenge.
Anger.
Say it loud, people. Judgment.
Wrongful accusation.
Pride. Silence. Alcohol. Loss.
disease. Isolation, depression. Thoughts towards harming others. Lord, hear our prayer. You can turn the lights back up. Advent helps us name what is true about the world, what is real about the world. It makes space for naming that which is broken and devastating. It gives us the time and the place and the space to remember the prophets of old and to join them in the questions like, how long, O Lord? Where are you, God? Why can't I see you? Why is your face hidden from us? How long will you hide yourself from us? These are the questions that we can't be afraid to bring out to the Lord because he knows they're in us. He knows the darkness that falls around us, that's in us, and he longs to draw it out of us. Now, Advent is a time of joy for many people, but it's also a time of deep sadness, right? Because the glimmering lights, they remind us, they're reminding us of what isn't how it should be. They remind us of our loneliness when everyone's getting together and celebrating. They remind us of our loss. They remind us of doubt. We hear all these stories about the baby Jesus and we're like, I'm not sure, right? In her book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, Barbara Brown Taylor says, there is a light that shines in the darkness that is only visible there. Now, there's this other word for darkness that's found in Scripture that's awesome, and it stands out from many other forms of darkness. It's found in Exodus 20, and this is when they're at Mount Sinai, and Moses has just received Torah and given it to the people. And it says, the people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where God was. This word for darkness is arafel in Hebrew, and it means not just the absence of light kind of darkness, but this thick and heavy darkness with this deep gloom. But within this darkness, God dwells. Moses went to the darkness because that's where God was. And so in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, after Jesus is crucified and dies, and it says darkness fell over the land, arafel fell over the land. It's a holy kind of darkness where God dwells. Barbara Brown Taylor also says, the good news is that dark and light, faith and doubt, divine absence and presence do not exist at opposite poles. Instead, they exist with and within each other like distinct waves that roll out of the same ocean and roll back into it again. It's kind of like when the psalmist says in Psalm 139, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me. Because even the darkness isn't dark to you, God. Darkness is as light as day to you, God. So I'm going to bring this up because I'm still really, really sad about it and probably bitter also. But I was supposed to go to Israel with my husband Steve on October 20th. Very, very sad. So obviously we couldn't go. And as sad and upset as I was, it's nothing compared to as sad and horrific it is every day when we turn on the news and see what's happening there and how the world is being affected by it, right? So much hate and darkness has come out, right? And in some places, people aren't even pretending to hide their anti-Semitism anymore. in places where you would least expect it. And there's Islamophobia. That's like a word that's normal in our vernacular now, that we would be afraid of Muslim brothers and sisters, people who bear the image of God. Leaders of nations, including our own, bringing out all kinds of darkness and the truth that money and power is much more important than the flourishing of people. It's all coming to light. Now, that's what happens in the darkness, right? When we're in the darkness, we have this response, fight, flight, or freeze, right? People do all kinds of things in the darkness. Sometimes we run and we just run towards the light, or we run to opposite ends of the darkness and we hate what's on the other side of it, right? We go to extremes in the darkness. Or we can sit in the darkness and be in the darkness, and we could go all the way into ourselves in the darkness so that it gets even darker, or we can sit in the darkness in silence and solitude and prayer and let God show up in the thick gloom of darkness. So Advent invites us into this dark place where we look forward to light and we ask God to let us, to teach us how to practice the vocation of looking for light, or of trusting that there's light when we can't see, or of hoping for light when it feels debilitatingly dark. Will we practice it? Will we allow ourselves to be surrounded by it? This is what Advent invites us into. So I came across this article this last week in Christianity Today, and it really cut me to the core, and I haven't been able to get it out of my head, so I'm going to share part of it with you. The title of the article was "Christmas Celebrations Canceled in Bethlehem, Jerusalem, and Jordan." It said, "Gutted by what's happening in their region, Holy Land Christians exchange holiday cheer for a hallowed Christmas Eve in solidarity with their suffering neighbors. Christian leaders in the West Bank have decided to cancel public festivities, and for the first time since modern festivities, the birthplace of Jesus will not be decorated. The heads of churches in Jerusalem and the Council of Local Evangelical Churches in Jerusalem asked Christians to refrain from unnecessarily festive Christmas activities. One leader said, due to the thousands killed and in prayer for peace, we will only hold traditional services and devotionals on the meaning of Christmas. Religious services will continue. In our homes, we can celebrate, but in our hearts, we are suffering." So here we are in real time, and this crazy darkness that seems to be very familiar to the land of Israel is there. And we here in Brentwood, in our place that we're at, we can't even imagine what that would be like, right? But I love what it said, that we're refraining from unnecessarily festive activities. But in prayer, we're going to remember our neighbors who are suffering. So prayer to them is more than just sitting with their eyes closed and their heads bowed and petitioning God. It's actually entering into the darkness as the light of the world. In real time, they're choosing to strip away all the shimmeriness of Christmas, all the unnecessary festivities that they say, and they're choosing to face the darkness from the place where the people of God, the light of the world, gather. They don't want or need the festivities, the trees, or the lights, but they do need Christmas. And they do want to tell the story of Christmas. They do want to have devotionals and things that turn their heart to the story of Christmas. It's still important without all the shimmeriness that we attach to it. It's still our story. Jesus calls himself the light of the world. and they are taking on the person of Jesus. So normally at the end of like a message, presentation, or whatever, we usually open it up for questions, and that's great, but if you listen to the Journey Now podcast, you know that I always have lots of questions, and my question to you today is, where do you see the light? Because the Bible also tells us in Revelation that one of the best ways to overcome the darkness is to tell stories of light, right? And so let's tell each other right now, I think Tim's going to grab a mic, and let's tell each other and Sam, these stories of light. Because our stories of light will encourage other people. They remind us that God is moving in the world and how he's operating in the world. The smile of a 5-year-old. A 12-year-old moody boy that still wants to put his arms around his mom.
Okay, so 5 years ago, our daughter was in heart failure, and she got a heart transplant right before Christmas Day. So it's been 5 years this month, December 10th or 11th. And in that time, my social media account went very dumbly viral. I gained like 75,000 followers because people were watching me walk this out in real time with my faith. Having grown up a Christian but never having to use it was a very interesting dynamic, and we didn't know if she was going to live or die. We definitely thought God was going to heal her, and he definitely did in a different way. But one of the things that happened at the time, just because I was exposing people to my prayers and to faith and to saying basically, whether you do or you don't, we're yours, is that people from all over the world began to pray again. Mm. And this is relevant now because I've been kind of sharing a little bit here and there in the past. She went into heart failure in September. So between September and now, every year I kind of look back as we celebrate her life. And I posted something just quickly the other day in my Instagram stories, and someone wrote back saying, oh gosh, I remembered. I grew up Catholic, I didn't really know God, and you were the reason I started looking again. Your account, the way you guys walked that out. And I just took a screenshot of it and showed it to my husband, and I was like, this is what gets buried.
Yeah.
This is what we forget.
Yeah.
That God did that regardless of how we walked it out, as messy as we did, and all the very silly attack of the enemy on the other side that she lived, like the survivor's guilt, and all the other things that go into it, he did a real thing, and he's still doing it, and people still remember, and when they see her face, they see his light.
Yeah, that's so good, Amanda. That's called a praise clap. That's awesome. What else? Big or small?
Hey. I think over the years, I've experienced a lot of light in the understanding and supportive gaze of people in my addiction recovery groups. Just being among people that are giving me the benefit of the doubt in a way that's not judgmental has felt very holy.
Mm. Thank you.
I was, well, basically, at a very young age, I was diagnosed with autism, and for the longest time, I thought that meant that I was, well, stupid, ignorant, mentally worthless. And then I just, it was rough thinking for so long that I was one of the normal people. But then when I asked my mother one day if I was autistic, she said yes, and I was stunned. Didn't know what to think, but I got over it, and I just prayed on it for a bit, tried to find some peace with it, and figure out what all that meant. So I waited for a bit for God to respond to my prayers on his time, and finally he introduced me to things like special needs groups and people who are willing to actually make friends with those who are special needs. And I've got many friends who accept me now, where I would have feared to talk to them before. I just wanted to say to them, thank you. They showed me some light in the darkness, even though they themselves would rather stay in darkness. It is kind of sad. I got a question, if that's okay.
Sure.
My best friend is happy where he is in life, but thing is, he's atheist to the core. I want him to have a happy afterlife, but I'm not willing to force Christianity on him. He doesn't want to come to the light. He knows the light, but he doesn't want to come to it. He's happy where he is. How do I just leave him where he is and try and be content with his decision, or what do I do?
What is your name?
I'm Zach.
Zach, you are such a gift to this community. I think that what you're doing is shining light in your friend's life. I think your testimony, your story, your existence, who you are, displays Christ to him every time you are with him. And we can trust in the faithfulness of God to open his eyes and his heart when the timing is right. But Zach, you just keep being you, because you're pretty awesome. Thank you for sharing that with us.
I grew up being told that a broken family is a sin. I had a divorce around a few years ago, seven years ago, so details don't matter. Every year I take a photo with my family and my ex-wife to show that even in the midst of brokenness, there is beauty. So that is a light that I look forward to doing every year around this time, is to take a picture with my family and my ex-wife and a kid that we had together with my two other little ones as well.
That's awesome. Thank you. We have one in the back.
So this isn't about me, but it's just about being that light when you walk out into the world and it seems so very dark. Wherever you are, you see a lot of unkindness and evil. Use your voice. God's really blessed me with the ability to sing. So wherever I am, I'm singing worship songs. And I have had so many experiences of people coming up to me in a store and following and looking for me and stopping and singing with me and saying, I remember that song from when I was a kid. Or stopping and just asking somebody how they are. And if they're not good, praying with them. Can I pray for you? You have a voice. It's a beautiful thing. There are people around you who need to hear it.
Thanks, Jasmine. Okay. Well, band, you can come back up. Thank you, everyone.
We're going to dim the lights, not turn them all the way off. And just use this time that we have left to respond. Maybe you have a story that you didn't share out loud that's lingering in your mind. So if you would, close your eyes and feel the space that you take up in this room. Feel the floor beneath your feet, the seat cushion beneath you. Notice how you're breathing. It's important that you know that it's good that you take up space. Because when Jesus says, "You are the light of the world," as a community, we each take up space in that. So as we think about darkness and light, I think the things that are external to us come to mind really easily. What's out there that's dark. But Advent also invites us to draw in and near the Spirit of God and to ask the Spirit of God to shine light into all the dark and shadowy corners of our heart and our soul. What it is that we contribute to that's dark in the world. The thoughts we have, the things that we're hiding, the things that we're not acknowledging, these are all things that are hidden in the dark. And so we get this opportunity to ask God to shine his light into us. So when you do that, what do you hear? Because if it's something railing against your character or your personhood, that is not the voice of God. But if it feels gentle or gentle and firm, steady, if it's inviting you into something with the hope of goodness and healing on the other side, that is Jesus. That's what it means to wait with hopeful anticipation in the dark, when we can see what's there and trust that on the other side, it will not be this dark. And if you don't hear or feel anything in this moment, that's okay too, because sitting in the dark and the quiet and the silence takes practice. Which is actually what Advent is. It's practice, practicing the ways of Jesus in this liminal space of the already but not yet.